We're on a mission to help founders hit product market fit faster. We do this by interviewing founders that have been there. I'm your host, Adam O'Donnell. This podcast is put together by Zendesk for Startups. We offer 6 months free of Zendesk customer support suite for qualified product-oriented companies. Jason, welcome to Sit Down Startup Founder Podcast, where we try to uncover great companies like Halo Investing and understand how you hit product market fit. But before we even do that, do you want to just give the audience an idea of what you do and then kind of lead into a low moment that you've had on your journey to this success?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me, Adam. At the end of the day, Halo is a two-sided marketplace that has disrupted and democratized the $3 trillion market of structured notes. And structured notes are the biggest market you've never heard of. So it's okay if you're like, what the heck is a structured note? Most people have never heard of the product before. And ultimately, what a structured note is it's an investment product. And it's an investment product that is manufactured by big banks like a JP Morgan, a Citigroup, a Bank of Montreal. And they give investors a level of downside investment protection against market declines. Very helpful and kind of volatile on certain markets that we're dealing with right now. Obviously, the market's gone up, but it's certainly volatile, as all markets are all the time, right? And so ultimately, these products were only available to ultra high net worth individuals and institutions. You needed at least $1 million to buy one product. And they were super clunky. They were super inefficient, meaning you couldn't really sell prior to maturity. The fees were really high. They weren't transparent. You didn't know how they worked. And buying and managing these products for financial advisors was like working with a travel agent before Orbitz, right? It was very, very manual. And so ultimately what I wanted to do through my previous experience as an advisor and at Credit Suisse was that I wanted to do what we all do, right? In the technology industry, which is we make things better through technology and we make things more scalable through technology and we make things scale through technology. This was a product that could not scale. And so Halo does two things. On one side of our business, we help these big banks who manufacture the product, manufacture it a lot more cheaply and a lot more scalably. Think of our technology as like Henry Ford's assembly line for structured notes. We brought automation into the manufacturing process of this $3 trillion market. And on the other side, we digitally connect these big banks to financial advisors now all around the world. So financial advisors of all wallet sizes can be able to buy these really important products within portfolios and not only buy them, right? But they can get educated on them, they can analyze them, and they can purchase them for as little as $1,000 versus $1 million. So quite a big difference than what it used to be just 10 years ago.
This is amazing. When I hear this story, it's like, of course this is going to work, because you're just like, oh, this thing that was super valuable to high net worth individuals, now we're bringing it down, making it democratized. Like, how could that not work? But I know that it was not that easy. So I'm excited to kind of understand, you know, how you got to this product market fit journey. But just to park on that for 1 second, the way you described it to me right now, is that how you described it when you first started, or did you change?
It was. And so, you know, ultimately, you know, when we started the company, I had a vision to say, we have a big problem in this country that needs to be solved, right? And I always educate a lot of entrepreneurs that entrepreneurs fall in one or two camps. The first camp is, I have a really cool idea, and I'm going to go look for product market fit, right? I got really cool technology, and I'm going to find the industry or the sector that it applies to. Or an entrepreneur says, there's a really big problem that needs to be solved and only I can solve it. And I fall in the second camp. So I spent my career as a financial advisor. I was a partner on a large private banking team there where I managed portfolios for ultra high net worth individuals and institutions. And these products, structured notes, were critical to my asset allocations. About 20% of my portfolios were dedicated to the product. And I saw during the great financial crisis, which was 2008 and 2009, all the pain that investors were taking, especially the retail, right? Mom and pop, where my clients, yeah, we took some pain, but we had access to structured notes. We had access to private equity and hedge funds and all these other alternative investments that helped protect us against the market, where 99% of investors, they had stocks, they had bonds, and they had nothing in between. And when you're looking at your portfolio that's down 60% at one point, you know, from the fall of 2007 through Q1 of 2009, it doesn't matter if you're a professional investor or not, or how much you know, you're scared, right? And we were all scared. And the problem with the proverbial mom and pop is once you're scared and you think that you may not have enough money to retire, you hit the panic button and you hit the exit button. And that's the worst time you can hit the exit button. So these products allowed my clients and my investors, and now through Halo, all investors of all wallet sizes to say, hey, it's okay when we hit that turbulence. I have the downside investment protection. It's ultimately like insurance around your investment. And so how I always used to explain it and how I still explain it is like, you would never drive a car without insurance, right? Like, not only would it be illegal, but it'd also be reckless. It's irresponsible. Yet we invest without insurance every single day, right? And it's one of the most important things in our lives outside of our family is our investment portfolios, because that's what's going to send our kids to college and help us buy a house and help us retire. And we are Delta One with the market, means we get all the euphoria of the upside, but we also get all the pain of the downside. And we all know that the pain of losses outweigh the joy of gains 2 to 1. And so that was really the premise for me, Adam, was let's solve this problem, which is the savings crisis. The last thing that I'll say about that, just to put this in perspective, is that the median savings rate in this country for someone going to retire is $63,000. How can you retire with $63,000? And ultimately, we need that bridge to that risk gap between stocks and bonds, because when you don't have enough to save, then you're going to be taking more risk within your portfolios, right? And that ultimately leads to even worse consequences, because when we take more risk, there's more downside, right? So it's the self-fulfilling prophecy, which we ultimately solve. And so ultimately, that was what we aimed to do, was be able to democratize it, but democratize it for a reason. And that's the advice I give entrepreneurs, is have a mission. Don't just have a product. Have a mission and then develop the product to be able to solve that mission or that problem that you're looking to solve.
You knew the pain of the customer. You had experienced part of how the solution was on the bigger side, and you felt like you were the person to close that gap. Help me with one of the lowest moments on your journey. It looking back, it's like, oh, hindsight's 2020. We got it. We just started and then it all worked. But I know that's not how it usually works. So help us with
No.
like.
And any entrepreneur who says that they haven't had a low moment is lying to you. And so I always say every entrepreneur, despite what you read in the papers where everything's all good all the time, in reality, right, there's a lot of high highs and there's a lot of low lows. You just want more highs than lows, right? That's the name of the game. And so, you know, one of the low moments, you know, with Halo actually came relatively early. And so, you know, when I talked about how we saw what the problem was, which was the savings crisis, and we wanted to solve it. And not to get too technical, but when you look at a structured note, ultimately it's an obligation of the big bank who issues it, right? And if that big bank is in trouble, then your investment's going to be in trouble. That is the risk of the product. Now, the banks who issue these products, again, are the JP Morgans of the world, and we don't need to be too concerned with those, right? But still a concern nonetheless. And so I did the classic entrepreneur mistake, which was, hey, I'm going to over-engineer the problem. And instead of having the bank ultimately be the issuer, I devised a way where you could use listed options and cash to replicate this structured note. So you remove the risk of that bank going under. And man, it was beautiful. It was so elegant. We worked with the New York Stock Exchange to launch binary options, and it was so cool. Even before we had a product, we were doing that. And everyone's like, this is going to change the world. And I was like, yeah, I know. And so ultimately, I wasn't thinking about kind of the second derivative of that, pun intended, was that the options that we were launching weren't supported by the big custodians, right? Who these financial advisors work with, right? So if you work with a financial advisor, they may custody with a Charles Schwab or a Fidelity or you know, a Pershing, you know, that's a custodian who houses your money. Now, I didn't think to go to the custodians and say, hey, can you support these options? And they couldn't, right? These new options that we were launching. And ultimately, I overthought the problem of removing the counterparty risk and bringing in more liquidity. And I couldn't get my product supported. I had the advisors who wanted the product, but the custodian couldn't support the actual product on its books and records, which means ultimately an advisor couldn't buy my product. And if an advisor couldn't buy my product, then I'm out of business. And so instead of trying to jam that through the custodians, and the custodians liked it. They were just saying, hey, there's a lot of work that we're going to have to do inside. And I've worked at banks my whole career. I know how long banks take, and that would take years. And anyone who's an entrepreneur who wants to be an entrepreneur, cash is oxygen, brother. And so you do not have years to be able to have a bank or a partner solve your problem. You will run out of cash. And so ultimately, what we did was saying, well, geez, what do we want to do? We want to be able to make this concept of protective investing more available to everyone. We like this concept of structured notes. $3 trillion are bought every single year around the world. Why don't we just go and make structured notes more efficient? Why do I have to recreate the entire product and unbundle it and make it perfect? I don't need to make it perfect. I just need to make the current product a lot better. And to use an example for those of you who are based in California and know Netflix, which of course everybody knows Netflix. I grew up down the street right from their headquarters. This was really Netflix's problem. At the very beginning, Netflix was actually going streaming, but the internet couldn't support its streaming service. So they went to DVDs, right? And they're like, okay, well, we're either going to go out of business or we're going to change our business model and pivot to be able to have the internet catch up with ultimately our vision. And so they went back to DVDs and then ultimately went to streaming afterwards once the internet caught up. And that's kind of the lesson number two. Number one is find a big problem that needs to be solved. Lesson number two for entrepreneurs is don't fall in love with your concept. Fall in love with the problem that you're trying to solve. Don't fall in love with your product or your concept. Pivot to make sure that you can live to fight another day, right? And ultimately, that's what we did. And if we didn't do that, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
100%. The world might tell you, or a lot of advisors might tell you, to just ram it down their throat, as you said in that example. The custodians,
The
it's
custodians, yeah.
just try to make it work and just like, we'll figure out how to get, but you took this step back and said like, no, we don't, oh, let's not overthink this. Let's kind of humble ourselves almost and like stay in the existing structure and
That's
just
right.
work within that.
Yeah, just make the existing structure better. And we did. And oh, by the way, I still work with the existing structure. I still work with structured notes. And we launched the platform live in 2017. And in 2017, we did about $100 million of product sales, which I was like, wow, holy smokes. We did $100 million of product sales, meaning $100 million of structured notes were bought. And I was over the moon, right? And now, fast forward to 2023, we're doing many billions of dollars every single year. And that number is only increasing on a month by month by month basis. And you know, that cover behind me is Fast Company's cover of ranking Halo in the top 10 most innovative fintechs on the
Wow.
planet, which is pretty cool, right? And so ultimately, there's a million war stories out there, but the biggest lesson is don't fall in love with your product, fall in love with the problem that you're trying to solve.
Oh, that's so good. Well, let's zoom into when you knew you hit product market fit. And I understand for you, it's a little bit different. It's almost like a cancer problem. We know that people buy the drug. Can we build it? But even still, what was that like? Could you take me into the month and the year and like what you were thinking during that moment?
Yeah, and it kind of happened twice. And so I was talking to a very prominent VC, and I'll spare his name out of so I don't embarrass him, but I was talking to a very prominent VC in Silicon Valley with my original business plan. And ultimately I was like, hey, you know, Jim, we've got this great concept. He knew about structured notes, loved it, and I was taking it direct to consumer because again, I was focused on the problem where the firefighters, the teachers, the police officers, those who may not have a financial advisor need this product more than anybody. Looked at me, he said, who buys this product today? And I said, well, financial advisors. He said, okay. And how much do they buy? And I said, well, they buy about 1.3 trillion every single year, and there's 3 trillion outstanding. He said, okay. And he's like, and your product makes it, your technology makes buying that product a lot better, right? And I said, yeah. He said, so why would you go direct to consumer? Why don't you just go to the people who buy it today? I'm like, Well, that's pretty novel, right? And so actually I pivoted my business plan, finding that product market fit based on that conversation of, again, overthinking the problem. Let's go to financial advisors who buy this product and already have the end client and who can educate that client on my behalf, which will be a heck of a lot faster and a heck of a lot cheaper, right? And so ultimately, when we did that, going into your question, Adam, is when we found it. It was really about 3 years ago. And so, we were gradually growing, right? It was like $150 million in sales, and then it was $300 million in sales, and then it was $600 million in sales. And then that ultimately turned into about $6 billion in sales. And that just continues to grow and grow and grow. And that's when we found the fit. Now, we still have a lot of work to do, right? Because again, structured notes are the biggest market that no one's ever heard of. And that's the opportunity in our space, is that we found a big space. And so you kind of have this problem with a lot of entrepreneurs where you're trying to disrupt a small space. And the first thing that I always ask other entrepreneurs who are looking for capital or wanting to raise capital is, I put my investor hat on from my previous days, is, well, how big's your addressable market? Right? Like, you might have a really cool product and it's probably really cool, but if you don't have a big addressable market, then it's never going to scale. And if it's not going to scale, then it's not going to mean anything. Right. And so that's kind of the blessing of the curse of capitalism, right? Is that you have really cool ideas that can change your industry, right? But they need to be able to change the world. And so you always have to think about what's your addressable market. And ultimately your target market and what your economics are and what your revenue is and how you can ultimately scale this product, right? Because we're in a new world order where it's no longer just about growth, it's also about growth and profitability, and you need to have that fine line.
Which is a good thing, I would say, but it's so funny
It's
you
a
say
very good thing. Yeah, it is a business for a reason, right? As entrepreneurs, we get really excited about our product and we want everyone to use them, but you need to charge for it. Right, you need to make money. You're not a charity, and so ultimately, you need to balance that act, right? And I think it's really good. And you get that pendulum that swings every 10 years or so to say, okay, it's growth at all costs. Nope, it's profit at all costs. And we were just through that, right? I call it nuclear winter for venture capital over the last 2 years, where it's like the rug gets pulled out. No more focus on growth, just focus on profitability. And oh, by the way, it's not that easy. So again, for entrepreneurs who are in the early stages of the next cycle, don't fall into that trap, right? I call it some of those Midwest values, is think about your bottom line, think about the conservatism of your business model to say, hey, we are going to grow, but we're going to grow at a reasonable price, meaning we're going to really focus on our bottom line. We're not going to scale too fast. And we're going to cut down on the science experiments, which is what I saw a lot of people do. Ultimately, when capital's free and when you've got interest rates at 5.25, capital's no longer free.
Absolutely. And I love the Midwest value quote. By the way, our CEO is from Ohio, and an SVP on our team is from Missouri.
I'm
My
sure I
wife.
offend a lot of people. I'm originally from California. We've got great values in California. I just talk about from a business mindset.
Sure.
Midwestern people tend to be a little bit more conservative
Yes.
in regards to their spending and ultimately their capital conservation.
No, it's a great, I love it. Well, the last question around that is, when that VC that you were just mentioning suggested to go to financial advisors, that seems so clear now, but I just have a hard time believing that you did not think about that, or someone on your team previous. So I'm kind of curious, like, what were the pros and cons around doing that? Because I doubt it was just like, oh wow, we never thought of that.
Yeah, I mean, we thought a lot about it before and afterwards, right? And so the before was I was a financial advisor, so it's not like I didn't think about that, but I got caught up in my own impact, right? Like, I wanted to change the world, and why just stick to financial advisors when I can go to everybody? But more importantly for me, Halo is really built on a social purpose, as you could see the sign behind my shoulder, right? Of impact before profit. I want to create a positive impact in the world. And if you do that, then ultimately the profits will come. But I always put impact first. And that's what I always encourage a lot of other entrepreneurs to do as well. Now, to that point, right, is that I wanted to go and help and save everybody because the savings crisis is personally important to me. But as I thought about what Jim was saying, I was saying, well, geez, that does make a lot of sense. What's the pros and the cons? Well, direct-to-consumer companies can oftentimes get higher multiples than B2B companies. So that was the con, right? More branding. Again, as an entrepreneur, you always want to see your brand every single place. And in the B2B world, your brand's not as prevalent as it in the consumer. Now, the pro is a lot of these D2C trading platforms have an average customer acquisition cost of around $900. You want to go and you want to get 1 million customers, you can do the math, right? That's a lot of money that you need to raise. And so for me, again, as it goes back to my advice to entrepreneurs, is cash is oxygen. And oh, by the way, no one gets a medal for how much cash you raise. It's actually the opposite. The more cash that you're raising, the more you're diluting yourself and your employees and all of your other investors. So be really frugal. Before we raised a really big round, and I will say we did raise a large round in our Series C equity round. Before that, we had only raised $18 million, and we were spending across the world on $18 million with plenty of cash still left in the bank, right? And so it can be done. And so, I always say be scrappy and be hungry, right? Those are two really good principles for entrepreneurs to live by.
I love that. I'm just curious, like as a growth stage founder, tying it to customer experience along the way, I think for me in the early days, like things got really messy with our with the way that we handle customers because we were trying to focus on growth too much. I'm sure you haven't done that, but I'm just curious, what is your like North Star metric around like we're doing a good job managing our existing customers, maybe like the financial advisors that we work with?
Yeah, I mean, so obviously we manage and monitor a Net Promoter Score, which is really, really high in the industry, and that's great. And we look at, client retention and customer retention and new advisors on board, and those are really great too. But for me, it's just the old-fashioned blocking and tackling. Get out and talk to your customers. I travel all the time, not to speak at conferences and do all that other stuff, which I do, but I spend most of my time traveling just talking to clients or customers, right? And it's about understanding what do they want. And what I built Halo, it was really about building what my customer wanted. It wasn't what I think my customer wanted, right? Even though I was an advisor and I could fall into that trap really easily, it was no, this isn't all about Jason wants. It's about who the person is paying me. What do they want? Right. And so get out and talk to your customer and build what they want to build is very simple. And maybe I'm just oversimplifying it, but that's what I do is I just talk to my customers, my team talk to my customers, and we build what they want built ultimately. And that's always worked really well for us. The last piece of advice is you don't need to build everything. Find a few things that's their big pain point. You don't need to build this grandiose platform that's perfect and beautiful. Get out and break some stuff because, oh, by the way, what you're building is not going to be what the platform looks like in the next 12 months. And I sure as heck can tell you it ain't going to be that way in 24, 36 months. My platform looks totally different. And so we went out and we built and solved the first few major pain points, right? I call those high payload, pain points of ultimately what do they want fixed the most, right? What's the biggest pain that they're dealing with? And that's what I focused on. There's a laundry list of them, but I only focus on the top three. And that's kind of how we think about things at Halo is just focus on the major pain points. Don't focus on building the most beautiful product, solving every pain point. You never will. And those pain points will change.
That's so good. Well, Jason, thank you for your time. If I'm a founder, wanted to reach out to you, is the best way is LinkedIn or Twitter?
LinkedIn, please.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Adam.
Thank you for listening. If you want to learn more about Zendesk for startups, check out our website, zendesk.com/startups. Also, we're always looking to improve, so don't hesitate to email me with any feedback on how we can ask better questions, guests to target, or anything else that we can do to better help you as a founder. My email is adam.odonnell@zendesk.com.